Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Diving deep into your Boston Red Sox, it's Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett, your exclusive home of the Sox, WEEI.
1-0, Verdugo drives one high and deep into left field. This one hit well. Gurriel back. He leaps and he cannot get it. It's off the wall and off his glove. Here comes Kike. Biggio Bichette's throw to second, not in time. RBI double for Verdugo. And the Red Sox lead it 1-0.
All right, welcome in. How about that for your Red Sox as they take out the Toronto Blue Jays 2-1? And as bad as yesterday was, you lost that game 18-4. The most home runs ever given up by the Red Sox at Fenway Park. 8 if you were counting. It felt like the world was ending yesterday for the Red Sox. And how about the fact that they win this game tonight and they salvage a split in the series? 617-779-7937, the number. With you until midnight. What are your biggest takeaways from this game? How impressed were you with the outing from Nathan Eovaldi? Look, there are certainly concerns that you have with this Red Sox team right now. And they were exposed over the weekend, no doubt about it. They were exposed against the Astros as well. But you got to give them credit for responding tonight. And in particular, Nathan Eovaldi, who I'll get into it in just a second here. But I think we also have to acknowledge there is a certain member of the Red Sox right now that deserves a whole lot of credit for what he's been able to do this season for this team. And that's Rafael Dolis. I say that facetiously because anytime the Blue Jays want to put this guy on the damn mound against the Red Sox, sign me up. Keep trotting that guy out there. And I don't feel bad for him whatsoever that he's having no success whatsoever against the Red Sox, because he's one of the main reasons, not one of the main reasons, but he's an example of why we need a pitch clock in Major League Baseball. Dude, throw the ball. Throw the ball. You don't need 45 seconds in between pitches. So I love the fact that this guy that takes an hour to throw the baseball, I love the fact that the Red Sox continue to beat him up at the end of these games. He has 3 losses on the season. All 3 of them are to your Boston Red Sox. I absolutely love it. And tonight, you saw it happen right away. Alex Verdugo singles, play that Biggio would like to have back. But nonetheless, they count it as a single and give Verdugo credit for putting the ball in play. We see too many strikeouts with this Red Sox team. Verdugo is one of the best guys in the entire sport at not striking out. The numbers indicate that. He's striking out, what, just 12% of the time in the season. He's been phenomenal. Then JD doesn't try to get too big, does his thing. A little single on a sinker, 112 miles an hour on the exit velocity. Bogarts, unfortunately, gets underneath a slider that was middle-middle. That was a juicy pitch for Bogarts. I guarantee you, if you ask Bogarts after the game tonight, he'd say, I'd like to have that pitch back. But then Devers takes a sinker looking inside. Not a good pitch to hit, so I like the fact that he didn't swing at that thing, right? Because you need to bring in the run there. He fouls off a slider. Then he takes a splitter, not even close. Next pitch, off the wall, 106 miles an hour on the exit velocity. And there you go. The Red Sox win this game 2-1. And they pick up Matt Barnes, who, of course, gave it up to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in that ninth inning. And by the way, the Red Sox have to make a major adjustment next time they play the Blue Jays. I know that Hernandez was really good in this series. Bichette had a pretty good series as well, although I still believe that there are easier ways to get Bichette out than the way the Red Sox are approaching it. And I know that it's a staff-wide approach to throw strikes. Well, Bichette swings at 40% of pitches out of the zone. You can get him out of the strike zone. You don't always have to throw the guy strikes. That's something in terms of a game planning thing that I would like to see the Red Sox make an adjustment to next time they play the Blue Jays. is throw more balls out of the zone to not only Bichette, but it's the same scenario with Grichuk, and it's the same scenario with Hernandez. All those guys swinging a ton of pitches out of the zone. You look at the Blue Jays on the season, they're just 15th in all of Major League Baseball in terms of making contact out of the zone. They're 13th in chasing pitches out of the zone, and they're just 15th in contact. Now, the Red Sox swing at a lot of pitches out of the zone as well, but they're really good hitting outside of the strike zone, right? They are second in all of Major League Baseball in contact out of the zone. So the Blue Jays, they swing at a lot of pitches out of the zone, but the problem is they don't put them in play that often, and that's what you get to take advantage to of next time against these guys. Now, with the exception of Guerrero. Guerrero doesn't chase anything. This guy is legitimately a perfect hitter, but you can't let one guy take over the series, and he almost won this game for them tonight. You look at his numbers in this series, 9 for 15, 4 home runs. He had a home run in every game. So what? He 9 for 15, by my math, he hit 600 in the series. You can't let one guy take over a series like this. As great as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is, you got to be able to limit him somewhat offensively. You can't give him anything to hit. I'd be more comfortable with saying, hey, Kate, let's pass the baton here. Pitch him all the way on the edges. Okay, great. If he chases one, which he ordinarily doesn't do, you take that. But you can't play around with this guy anymore. Matt Barnes hangs a bad curveball there. That was a horrible curveball. And quite frankly, now I know that he came back with the curveball to Hernandez in the next at bat, but he didn't have his curveball tonight. Let's be real about that. He threw a bad curveball to Bichette. That was a borderline pitch that he was given a strike. Now, it looked like it was a strike, but it was not 100% guaranteed to be a strike. But that was a bad curveball he threw there. And then he threw the cement mixer to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and he's not going to miss that, right? I mean, he hit that thing like 450 feet. Unbelievable. So this coaching staff, the manager Alex Cora, Dave Bush, the pitching coach, they have got to come up with a better plan next time around. And maybe they did have a good plan for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It was just a lack of execution, if you will. Either way, it's got to be better next time you play the Blue Jays with how you approach Vlad Jr., because clearly right now he is the front runner for the MVP in the American League. Quite frankly, right now he is the best player in the sport, and I don't even think that's a question right now. Mike Trout has not been playing. I know that Otani does multiple things because he pitches, and of course he has been incredible hitting the baseball as well, but right now I don't know how anybody else in the American League has a chance at winning MVP, and quite frankly, I'd take him over anybody in baseball right now with the bat that he's been able to swing. He doesn't chase anything. He destroys everything in the strike zone, and he just took over a series. He almost won his team the third game in this four-game series because of that home run. He extended it. He could have extended it to extra innings if Dolis didn't pitch. And if I was a member of the Blue Jays right now, I would not want to play with that guy. Every time he plays the Red Sox, he gives it up. And he takes forever to throw the damn ball. If you're going to take forever to throw the damn ball, you better be good. And this guy's not good right now, quite frankly. Now, I think that the member of the Red Sox that deserves the most credit for what transpired tonight is Nathan Eovaldi. Because you think about the conversations we were recently having about this pitching staff, it has been a complete debacle over the past couple of weeks, right? It's one thing when one guy's not going right. Like for the majority of the month of May and into the beginning of June, Erod was really struggling. I mean, it was difficult to watch Erod pitch. And quite frankly, I didn't like the demeanor of Erod, the lack of toughness in Erod. It just felt like whenever he got himself into a jam, he was unable to pitch out of it, right? And what we saw from Nathan Eovaldi tonight was the opposite of that. It felt like he knew, I need to put a stop to this, and he was able to pitch through adversity. And I would say the same thing with Perez on Sunday. He got into trouble in the first inning, and he couldn't toughen up. I felt like Martin Perez, what he did yesterday on the mound was very unprofessional. Very unprofessional. I'm not telling you he wasn't trying. I'm not telling you that he didn't give the most effort, but there was a lack of execution, and that should be the game plan. Martin Perez has to know that his stuff isn't good enough to get guys out in the zone. He has to play on the edges, and now this is two consecutive starts where he didn't have location. So I felt Nathan Eovaldi certainly had his location tonight, and he was able to power through, as we've seen over the past 4 days or so, one of the best lineups statistically in all of Major League Baseball, and I think the stats are bearing themselves out when you actually watch these guys play. But you think about this. This pitching staff, since the Astros series entering tonight, the starters, they were 26th in ERA, 6.62. They were 27th in walks per nine innings, 3.76. You compare that to prior to this run, they were at 3.09. And the ERA, by the way, prior to this, it was at 4.07, 6.62 in this stretch. You look at home runs. They've given up 15 during the stretch, which is 17th in baseball, right? Before that, the Red Sox were second best in all of Major League Baseball in the first 36 games or so of the season, right, where they gave up only 21. And now that's compared to 10 games where they had given up 15. The whip, 1.77, dead last, 22nd during the other portion of the schedule at 132. So this pitching staff desperately needed a leader to emerge, and they definitely needed someone to take the mound and stop the bleeding, and Nathan Eovaldi did that tonight. Now, Nathan Eovaldi, this felt like a Nathan Eovaldi outing. He's never been a high strikeout guy. We all know that. He's never been a guy that gets a ton of swings and misses, and he didn't tonight, but he was able to locate his pitches. And here's the big thing that sticks out to you about Nathan Eovaldi. Just 6 hard-hit balls on the evening. If you do the math on it, that's 33%. On the season, his hard-hit percentage is 35.8%, which is good. And that, of course, means balls that travel more than 95 miles an hour on the exit velocity. That's in the 69th percentile in Major League Baseball, okay? And it's a big difference from where he was just a season ago. He was at 39%. So you're talking about almost a 4% change in terms of the hard hit rate for Nathan Eovaldi, and that was on display tonight. So I felt Nathan Eovaldi was the star of the game for the Red Sox tonight, because when you desperately needed somebody on that pitching staff to come up with a good outing, Nathan Eovaldi did that for you tonight. And he really only got himself into a couple of jams, right? I mean, you think about it, the first 3 innings, 1, 2, 3 innings, he only got himself into a couple of jams. You go to the top of the 4th inning after he got Semien to pop out. Bichette singles on a slider. Not a bad pitch, by the way, that Bichette hit there. It was, I got to give him credit. It was a little bit out of the zone. Bichette went there, and he was able to get it. And I actually liked the approach there, try to get him to chase. As a little bleeder. I mean, he barely hit it. 78 miles an hour on the exit velocity. But what we've seen too many times with this Red Sox pitching staff as it pertains to the starting rotation is throughout the year, when these guys get themselves in trouble, over the past 2 weeks or so, it feels like they just let go of the rope, right? So what's Nathan Eovaldi able to do? Well, he gets Guerrero looking at a fastball outside. Really good pitch to strike out one of the best hitters in the sport, or the best hitter in the sport in my mind. But then he walks Hernandez, his only walk of the night. And that's another thing about Nathan Eovaldi in this game, is he didn't walk guys. And Nate's never been a big walk pitcher. I mean, he's at 5.5%. He's one of the better guys in the sport, quite frankly, in terms of limiting the walks, especially on this Red Sox pitching staff when you get a lot of guys that give out free passes. But he walks Hernandez, but then he comes right back and he gets Grichik to pop out on a four-seamer. So with 2 guys aboard in that 4th inning, really the only difficult situation he got himself into until I get to the 6th inning here. But he did a good job pitching out of it, right? And that's what I like to see from Nathan Eovaldi. That's what I like to see from this pitching staff, is guys where the world is not ending when you get in a jam. And I feel like the body language from Eduardo Rodriguez and Martin Perez over the past couple of weeks, I know Perez had that great outing against the Astros like 2 weeks ago, but his last 2 starts, whenever these guys get themselves into jams, it's like the world's ending. Nut up, respond, and pitch through the adversity like Nathan Eovaldi did in the 4th inning tonight. So then he goes through the 5th inning relatively quickly. He won a good battle with Tellez, where it's an 8-pitch at bat, cutter in, and then he's able to get Gurriel to ground out on a 4-seamer. He gets Biggio to fly out. And the impressive thing about that is, after he has an 8-pitch battle with Tellez, he goes 4 pitches with Gurriel. He goes 2 pitches with Biggio to get that pitch count more manageable. Now, he only threw 81 pitches on the evening, but the fact that you go 8 pitches with the leadoff batter of the inning, and then you respond by only going 6 pitches after that, really good job by Nathan Eovaldi. So then you go to the top of the 6th inning. Alex Cora decides to bring him back out there. Great. Oh, by the way, I should mention this, by the way. So when you look at what he was able to do there in the 6th inning, I love the fact that he went after Maguire right away. Because I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason this season, the Red Sox as a staff struggle with the 9-hitter. Have you noticed that? They walk the 9-hitter way too much. And Nathan Eovaldi, and not that he walks a lot of guys anyway, but he just went right after Maguire. He sat him down on 3 pitches. It's a guy that's hitting .216 on the season. He's hitting 9th in the order for a reason. He's a soft-hitting catcher, if you will. Just go get him. And Nathan Eovaldi able to do that. He got him with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. Then here comes the real work for Nathan Eovaldi, right? Because if you think about it, that's going through the order twice. When Nathan Eovaldi tends to struggle in games, it tends to be when he gets to face guys a third time through. So the numbers bear it out, right? On the season, the opposition is hitting .343 against Nathan Eovaldi the third time through. They have a 380 on base percentage and a 918 OPS. So to put that into the proper context, basically, third time through the order, the opponents are J.D. Martinez or Xander Bogaerts hitting against Nathan Eovaldi. That's how good these guys are when they see Nathan Eovaldi the third time through. So that's when you start to get a little worried, even though the pitch count wasn't high or anything along those lines. You're just like, well, they've seen him a couple of times. The numbers on the season tell me that Nate usually struggles the third time through, but he was able to respond tonight. So first guy he faces, of course, Simeon, the leadoff hitter. The first guy he faces the third time through, obviously, is going to be the leadoff hitter. He's able to strike out Simeon three pitches. Just nasty stuff, too. He got him looking at 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Just an outstanding job by Eovaldi there. And then he gets Bichette to ground out to first base. Okay, so then comes the top of the seventh. And by the way, another thing that I should mention about Nathan Eovaldi tonight, these are all stressful situations. Now, he was able himself to limit the stress because he did what so many of these Red Sox pitchers haven't been able to do, which is limit the walks. And it's not in his DNA to walk people, but he was able to keep traffic off the bases. And quite frankly, he was pitching to contact better because on the season coming into tonight's game, he was getting banged around a bit, right? He was giving up 9.5 hits per nine innings, which ranks 61st out of 70 qualified candidates in Major League Baseball, right? So he has been getting hit a bit this season. But what he was able to do tonight, obviously limit the hits to just four. And secondarily, he was able to continue what he's been doing all season long, where he didn't walk a lot of guys. Although his last outing against the Astros, he did tend to give out some free passes. He gave out three in that one, which are a lot for Nathan Eovaldi. But anyway, so let's get to the seventh inning. Guerrero singles on a splitter, middle-middle. Okay, and it wasn't a great piece of hitting by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. either. Like, usually we think about him, it's rockets. It's only 89 miles an hour on the exit velocity. So nice piece of hitting for Guerrero. But you're thinking to yourself, all right, third time through for Nate. Guerrero gets the hit. Up comes Hernandez, who has had a really good series. Couple of three-run home runs the other night, right? Well, he singles on a four-seamer. And so then you got first and second with no outs. And then you're starting to think, okay, well, the trend is when Nathan Eovaldi faces a lineup the third time through, he tends to struggle. And this isn't something that is unique to Nathan Eovaldi. Quite frankly, we see this with most pitchers in Major League Baseball, right? There's a reason the Rays have been doing this for years, and they never let their starters go a third time through. Now, obviously, that changes with the Tyler Glasnows of the world, but even in the World Series last year, they wouldn't let Blake Snell do it, right? We see it all the time across Major League Baseball. Most pitchers struggle the third time through. It's actually weird if you look at Garrett Richards' numbers. He's the opposite. He's actually really good the third time through. He stinks the first time through. And maybe that's, I had a conversation with Rob Bradford about this a couple of days ago. Maybe that has to do with, since he's a big curveball guy, of course. He's got a lot of spin rate on his fastball. Maybe that has a lot to do with him just getting the feel for his pitches. That was Bradford's theory, which I think makes a lot of sense. But anyway, getting back to the original point, first and second, no outs. He gets Grichuk to bounce into a double play on a slider down. Huge, huge for Nathan Eovaldi there, right? And Dave Bush, by the way, came out to talk to him before that. So I don't know exactly what Dave Bush said. Maybe Nathan Eovaldi will reveal that after the game in his post-game press conference. And we'll hear from Alex Cora as well in just a little bit here. And by the way, if you want to weigh in on Nathan Eovaldi's outing, certainly welcome to do so. 617-779-7937, the number. But what I liked about that is Nathan Eovaldi, you get yourself into some adversity, you find a way to pitch out of it. Outstanding performance from Eovaldi. He sacked up unlike Perez and unlike Eduardo Rodriguez. And then, of course, Josh Taylor, who I'll get to in just a little bit here. He was able to finish out the outing for Nathan Eovaldi by striking out Telez. Got him to miss at three sliders. And Josh Taylor has been absolutely phenomenal for this team. The way that his season started, you were thinking, I don't know how much longer you're going to be dealing with the Josh Taylor project. But he has been absolutely incredible over his past 18 outings. In fact, his last 18 outings have been scoreless outings. And I love the energy he brings, too, coming out of the bullpen. And finally, you got it to the bullpen where they actually had an opportunity to win. I mean, yesterday, the game's over so early that Ryan Weber's on the mound. And you're burning guys like you're throwing out Marwin Gonzalez and Christian Arroyo. And quite frankly, from a Red Sox perspective, when now you're at 40 wins on the season, it's embarrassing that you found yourself in that situation yesterday because of Martin Perez. But Nathan Eovaldi needed to stop the bleeding today. He did that. Now the question becomes, can Eduardo Rodriguez build off this momentum? You're going up against a really good lineup in Atlanta tomorrow, despite the fact that they haven't achieved to the level that they expect to achieve this season in terms of the Atlanta Braves. You need a quality outing from Eduardo Rodriguez because, quite frankly, his performance this year, horrible. Absolutely atrocious. So Nathan Eovaldi maybe got his season back on track, and I think this is building off something when you do it against a really good lineup like Toronto. Let's see if Eduardo Rodriguez can do more of the same. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's kick it off with Paul. He's in Westfield. What's up, Paul?
Good evening, Bri. Well, my hope and aspirations are up after hearing you and Bradfro eviscerate a Ginsu slice of dice with both accurate and current information. It's nice to see you're back tonight with Eovaldi showing up. Devers with the big hit.
Yep.
However, Professor Bear, if I may submit a quick disclaimer. Mm-hmm. To those idiots who want to say we're all washed up, when you're dealing with Toronto and the Blue Jays and the Astros, who are knocking the cover off the ball, like you said, a number one and two offenses, 17 games in a row, 2.5 weeks without a day off, and 60 games less than two dozen away from halfway home, I think they're tired, and the pitcher said it best. Yes, if there's something wrong, we'll know. It's called not locating the ball, but the spin rate didn't drop. And this is sports talk radio, so to say there might be something on the ball which suddenly is causing the drop-off, of course you're going to ask that. One, it's sports talk radio, and that's how you find out, because if it is, we're screwed.
Okay, Paul, let me respond to that point first, and then we can get into the other point that you made in terms of the starting pitcher struggling.
Yep.
The research has been done, right? You had a couple of articles that have been written over the past couple of days. Chad Jennings wrote one in The Athletic, and actually Lou Maloney did an outstanding job last week talking about this on OMF. If you look at it, right, so the spin rate for the Red Sox in terms of the pitchers during the stretch where they've been struggling, it's the same as it was before, right, when they started to really say, okay, we're going to look out for the foreign substances. The Red Sox spin rate is the same as it was prior to this. I don't think any team across the sport right now is safe from saying, oh, my players don't use foreign substances or whatever. But what I will tell you about the Red Sox is the numbers bear out that it doesn't seem like it's the foreign substances with them whatsoever. So I didn't equate it to that, and I felt like it should be done, right? I mean, we have really good people covering this team in the town, so I appreciate the fact that people went out. They actually did the research. You can do the research yourself and see that the spin rate with these guys hasn't changed. So from a Red Sox perspective, no, I don't think that's an issue with them. Is it an issue across the sport? Certainly. Would I be surprised if a member of the Red Sox was using this stuff all the time? No, but right now the evidence points in the other direction.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And I don't understand this. This is where you can help myself and the audience. I understand the term natural couture. I heard him saying it's the combination of torque and velocity which creates the movement. When you add the spin rate, I get the concept. They're as you snap it with your wrist, the torque, and then of course the speed at the exit is what creates something that you can't hit. And so after 17 games in a row, midseason fatigue, the pitcher said it. They weren't locating it, Bri. So how do you?
Yeah, that's what it
how
is.
How do you figure it out?
Well, that's what
how
it
do
is,
you know
Paul.
When to stop?
Paul, that's what it is. And hey, I appreciate the phone call as always. 617-779-7937, the number if you want to grab his line. That's what it is. Everybody in the rotation has told you it. It's the command. That's what's been going on with these guys, with the exception of Erod. Erod is just, he's completely inconsistent right now. And quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of hearing the excuses for this guy. One day his changeup's good, the next day his changeup's not good. One time they figured out the cutter, and then his cutter wasn't good. One week he has a good fastball, then he doesn't have a good fastball. Just put all your pitches together, right? That's the irritating thing to me about Eduardo Rodriguez, is it's like every game we hear, oh, well, this was good or that was good. Oh, well, this pitch wasn't good, but that pitch was good. We feel better about this. We feel like we just need to make one adjustment and he's going to be good. Sorry, I'm not buying it with Eduardo Rodriguez. But with the rest of these guys, Martin Perez is a location pitcher. So I don't know if because Martin Perez had that great outing against the Astros and because in the month of May he had a 2.06 ERA and he was the best pitcher on the Red Sox staff during that stretch. I don't know if that like got into his head and he felt like I don't need to locate my pitches as well as I usually do. But the reality of the situation is you can see it with Martin Perez. Everything yesterday is center cut. It's right down the middle, right? It is right down the middle. And then you look at Nick Pivetta. He has had issues with his command lately as well. That's been a major issue for Pivetta, has been the command. Pivetta's a guy that has not been giving up a ton of hits on the season. In fact, he's been the best on the Red Sox in terms of the staff in limiting hits so far this season. But over the past two starts for Nick Pivetta, when he kind of started to go south, that's been an issue with him. And look, he's always been a guy that walks a lot of batters, but he also misses bats. And he hasn't been missing bats because the command has been so bad that when he's missing in bad spots in the zone. So if you look at this, okay, so last two starts for Pivetta, opponents are swinging at just 19% of his pitches out of the zone. That's compared to 29% in his first 11, which isn't a great number. I acknowledge that, but still, you're talking about a 10% dip-off. But here's the other thing that sticks out to you, is they're actually making better contact now when they're swinging at less pitches out of the zone, right? They're making contact on 71% of those pitches compared to 62% before. So the pitches he is missing out of the zone, he's not missing in good spots. And another note is, you look at it, first 11 starts for Pivetta, 208 opponents batting average, last two starts, 328 opponents batting average. And if you look at the stuff, and Alex Cora actually alluded to this prior to the game, you look at the stuff, he still has the same velocity on the fastball, still has the same spin rate in all his pitches, but the issue right now for Nick Pivetta is he's missing badly out of the zone, and he's missing badly in the zone. And the same thing can be said about Perez. Now, the reason that Perez, when he has these outings, and he can't make it out of yesterday, the second inning, and his prior start against the Astros, he only made it two innings. The issue for Perez is he doesn't have stuff, right? He gets a lot of looking third strikes, if you will. But Nick Pivetta has got much better stuff, right? So that's why Pivetta can still give you some innings. When Perez is missing his spots, he gets lit up. He makes it look like batting practice like he did yesterday, right? So with Perez, the location has got to be there. And that's what's gotten into this Red Sox club in general over the past couple of weeks is they've all been missing their spots. I would say the same thing about Nathan Eovaldi in that Astros start. He was missing his spots. And we saw tonight when Nathan Eovaldi hits his spots, he pitches well to contact. Always been able to do that when he actually hits his spots, and tonight he certainly had his command. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Napoleon in Abington. What's up, Napoleon?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Before the Red Sox started the first series with Houston,
yep,
I thought to myself, if they can go through this stretch of all these good teams they're playing and have around 500, that's good. Because it's a tough stretch.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Is that it?
Yeah, that's basically what I wanted to chime in about.
Fair. Look, and I appreciate the phone call, Napoleon. 617-779-7937 if you want to grab his number. It's a fair point. Here's the issue I have, though. There has been too many games in this stretch where the Red Sox have not been competitive, right? Yesterday, you're not competitive. The game's over after the first inning. You lose that game 18-4. That's not a competitive ball game. Saturday, and I love Nick Pivetta, but that was not competitive. That game was not competitive whatsoever. You had a couple of games against the Astros that were not competitive, and you got your ass kicked. That's the issue I have. When you're not competitive in these games, right? You lose to the Blue Jays, you lose to the Astros, there's no shame in that. But you have got to be competitive. And one other thing I would mention, and Paul alluded to this earlier, and I did want to respond to it, and I forgot right away to respond to this because he brought up the whole thing with the foreign substances. But Paul mentioned the fact that some of these starters could be fatigued. 100% agree with that, okay? Because really think about it from this perspective. If the Red Sox were in a position right now where they're playing, 17 games in 17 days? Think about this. If Tanner Houck was actually available and he's making his way back now, or Connor Siebold was ready to come up to the big club, he's making his way back right now, right? Both those guys were dealing with injuries. So that's the issue the Red Sox have right now. They don't have guys down at the AAA level that are available to make spot starts. They have guys that are good enough. Tanner Houck, we've seen it. His stuff plays at the major league level. He was really good in one of his starts this season, and he was pretty good in the other start this year. So I would argue that if Tanner Houck was actually, I'm not arguing with anybody, but I would just make the point that if Tanner Houck were healthy right now, Alex Cora, Chaim Bloom would have called him up for a spot start during the stretch just to give some of the guys in the rotation a little bit of a breather, a little bit of a rest. So that does hurt that both Houck and Siebold are dealing with stuff. And I don't know, quite frankly, what their idea would be with Siebold if he'd be up at this particular point in time, but I would have to imagine that at least Houck would have gotten an opportunity during the stretch. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. A lot more to get into. We will get into Alex Cora's comments after the game tonight. And I do want to mention something that needed to be fixed with this Red Sox team, I don't know, 2 months ago. It's a very easy solution. We'll get to it next year on WEI.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're listening to Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Whenever we get on a good streak, you know, it starts with good pitching. You know, if you look back to the previous ones, you know, all the starters, we were all rolling together, and I think it takes one starter to go out there and do a great job, and it kind of resets everybody. You know, everybody gets that breather. We didn't have to really use that many guys tonight, which was big. You know, our defense was awesome. It was a close ball game all the way to the last out. You know, and I feel like that brings us together as a team, and you know, tonight we were able to, I was able to provide that for us. And, you know, like I said, JT came in there and threw the ball great, and Barnes came in. And, you know, unfortunately he gave up that home run, but we were able to get the win. And, you know, I'm going to bet on him every time out there that he's going to be able to come in and slam the door. So, Devers again, you know, Doogie let it off with the single, and JD was able to move him. Runners on first, second, and Devers is able to drive it off the wall. So I feel like, you know, right there, you know, we didn't have very many scoring opportunities, but we're able to come through when we needed to the most, and we're able to come out on top right there.
Nate, do you take pride in being the guy to do that, to kind of reset things and deliver that stuff?
I do, yeah. I mean, one, I want to be that guy, and then two, I want to face, you know, the best teams out there. You know, I want to go out there and try to be that stopper and give the team the best chance to win. And, you know, I knew that there was a lot coming in tonight to be able to, you know, split the series 2-2, but you know, I was focused. I felt like I had a good game plan. We were able to stick with it. We didn't have to change it too much. And Vasquez and I were, you know, we were kind of on the same, I mean, we were on the same page the entire time through. We had quick outs going through, and I think I had 81, 82 pitches tonight. So I felt good. I felt strong. And, you know, when the time came, JT was able to come in there and get the job done for us.
All right, that's Nathan Eovaldi after his great outing tonight. What'd you make of Eovaldi's performance? What are your concerns going forward with this Red Sox team? 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you until midnight. You'll hear from Alex Cora in just a little bit as his team does salvage a split in this series after losing 18-4 yesterday and really never being in the game Saturday either. You lost that one 7-2. Nick Pivetta was not great. So at the end of the series, you still split this with the Blue Jays, right? So that was the important thing about today, and Nathan Eovaldi certainly provided that. One note on Matt Barnes real quickly. I didn't like his approach tonight. I really didn't. Look, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Matt Barnes. He's striking out 47% of the hitters he faces this season. He's been incredible for the majority of the year, but I just felt like he overthought this thing, right? When you got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. up there, don't give him anything to hit, right? He gave him a horrible curveball. Not that he's trying to throw a bad curveball, but I felt like he was overthinking himself on the mound, where he's doing a lot of this quick pitch stuff now. You don't need to do that. Your stuff is too good. you don't need to quick pitch people, right? So I didn't understand the approach from Matt Barnes, and we've seen a little bit more of that from Matt Barnes lately. And I know there's a lot of issues with this team right now, and I don't want to complain about one guy that hasn't been an issue for the majority of the season, but I just didn't like his approach tonight. Quite frankly, I didn't like his approach to the game, and I don't believe he needs to pitch quick people or quick pitch people. You don't need to do that if you're Matt Barnes. Your stuff is good enough. People that need to do that are the Johnny Cuetos of the world that don't have the best stuff. You do not need to quick pitch people. Don't do it anymore. Stop. You're overthinking it. Just go after these guys like you've been doing for the majority of the season. Oh, I did also want to say this real quickly before I get into the one thing that the Red Sox should have changed 2 months ago. I want to send our best to Jerry Remy as he's recovering after he had to leave that game on Friday night. And I heard Dave O'Brien say on the broadcast tonight that he's doing better. He had heard from him. So thoughts and prayers certainly go out to Jerry Remy because he's been a staple here for my entire life as a Red Sox fan watching this team play. So I hope that Jerry Remy gets better quickly, and just for him to know that all of us are thinking about him at this point in time. But I did want to mention this real quickly here. There is something that I've alluded to that the Red Sox should have changed about 2 months ago. And quite frankly, they should have changed, not changed. They should have just stuck with before the season started. What are we doing with the leadoff spot? Somebody needs to explain this to me. Why don't they just put Alex Verdugo there? I understand, like, at the beginning of the season, wanted to try something different out, although I don't understand it in the same sense because you did the same crap 2 years ago with Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi, and none of them or neither one of those guys was comfortable at the beginning of the season, and eventually you had to make the switch to put Mookie back in the leadoff spot and put Benintendi in the two-hole, right? So, and then eventually put Benintendi down in the order. But I just feel like, why don't you just lead off Alex Verdugo? I look at all his at-bats tonight. They're all productive. Even the strikeout that he had, he forced a situation in that particular inning where Manoa had to throw nine pitches. So later on in his outing, you force him to throw nine pitches, which gets that pitch count out there so you get him out of the game quicker because the guy had been so good for the majority of his outing. That guy's got really good stuff. Young pitcher, big guy. And even his strikeout tonight was productive. But I think about it from this perspective. You look at what Verdugo was able to do in this game. His fingerprints all over the win. So in the bottom of the third, doubles off the wall. Gurriel cannot make the play. And it wasn't a rocket or anything along those lines. But he put the ball in play because that's what he does. And then, of course, that brings in Kike Hernandez to make it 1-0. So if you look at his numbers on the season. And by the way, I would also mention in the ninth inning, right? Not that he hit a rocket or anything along those lines, but he put the ball in play on an 0-2 count. He got himself on base, forced the defense to make plays. You don't have enough of those type of guys in the lineup, and especially at the top of the order, you would want this guy in the leadoff spot. And I know Alex Cora's like, well, we don't want to switch these guys around. Alex Verdugo was very comfortable in the leadoff role last year. He had a north of 350 on base percentage. It just feels like you have a perfect type of leadoff hitter on your roster and you're not using him. I mean, look at these numbers, okay? So Alex Verdugo, out of 142 qualified players, okay, that means they've had enough at bats, he has a 92% zone contact rate. So pitches in the zone, he makes contact 92% of the time. That ranks 12th in all of Major League Baseball. 12th, okay? He has a 12% strikeout rate. That is ninth in all of Major League Baseball. He swings and misses just 14.3% of the time. That's in the 95th percentile in Major League Baseball. So anytime the pitch is in the zone, 92% of the time, I should say, he's going to make contact. He only strikes out 12% of the time, which is incredible this day and age in baseball. That's why it's top 10 in the sport, not to mention the fact that he doesn't swing and miss. And his numbers are really good. 284, 345, OBP. So I don't understand why these other guys, Kike Hernandez and Christian Arroyo, I believe he should play every day at second base, but he should not be hitting leadoff. Alex Verdugo should. You just juxtapose these numbers. First of all, Verdugo's raw numbers are better than both these guys, but look at the Red Sox in terms of the leadoff spot on the season. 234 average. That's 24th in Major League Baseball. They would be ninth if Alex Verdugo was hitting there based on his numbers. 23.7% strikeout rate. If Alex Verdugo was hitting leadoff, that would be third in baseball. Not to mention a 686 OPS right now for the leadoff hitters of the Red Sox. That's 25th in baseball. If you put Verdugo there, it would be 10th. So it just feels like this solution to the leadoff spot would just be so much more productive if Verdugo was hitting there. And I even think about it tonight in the eighth inning. You have an opportunity there to get it to the big bats right then and there to try to give Matt Barnes more of a cushion. And instead of Kike Hernandez coming to the plate and swinging at a bad pitch. You have Alex Verdugo in that spot that can try to get it to whoever they're going to hit second, whether it be Devers or Bogarts or JD. I know JD doesn't want to hit second, but whoever you want to hit second, wouldn't you rather have Alex Verdugo trying to give this team an opportunity to get a bigger cushion for Matt Barnes? I just feel like the answer is so simple. Alex Verdugo is by far the best leadoff hitter on this team. He was the best leadoff hitter on the team last year. He was outstanding in that spot. Just put him in the leadoff spot. All the numbers indicate, like, this is the perfect guy to hit leadoff. He doesn't strike out. He makes contacts. Even his strikeout tonight was productive. Just put this guy in the leadoff hole. It's making me crazy. I don't want to keep saying, well, one day it's Kike. One day it's Arroyo. One day it's Santana. Well, I understand, like, if you don't have a solution to the problem, right? So if you didn't on this team have a legitimate leadoff hitter, I'd have no problem with Alex Cora. Keep doing this, right? Switch different guys. Give different guys an opportunity to win that spot. But the problem is you have a guy that is good enough to hit leadoff. Just put him in the leadoff spot. I don't understand it. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Wally in Fall River. Wally, what's up?
Yeah, what's up, Brian? I mean, we got our brains beat out yesterday, you know, even Saturday. But there's a lot of people already jumping ship on the Red Sox, throwing them to the Wolves. But like I said, whatever the situation was, whatever they were putting on the ball, Vaseline or whatever, Preparation H or Bengay, it's just legal. But like I said, we don't have five Pedro Martinez in this rotation. It's basically an average rotation. And like I said before, Cora and Dave Bush has squeezed the most out of them. But it's going to be curious to see what Chaim Bloom does at the deadline. You get 6 weeks. Now, we mentioned it before, Starling Marte. You add him to this lineup. He's a leadoff guy. You're going to have two spark plugs at the top of your two table setters. Now, as far as Bobby Dalbec, I've given up on him. I know what the situation they're going to do. Santana's going to go. Darwin Gonzalez, you're not going to get nothing out of him. And Kike, you're paying them $7 million, so you've got to keep him. But it's going to be curious to see what Chaim Bloom does. There's no really good starters on the market, Brian. If you want somebody, you're going to have to pay through the nose, and he's probably just a rental. So I don't see him making any moves in that area, except maybe adding a relief pitcher that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Wally, and I appreciate the phone call as always. 617-779-7937, the number. I could see them going out and getting another relief arm because that's what every contender does. You can never have too much bullpen help. Although I really like the bullpen right now, and I'll get into Josh Taylor in just a little bit, but Taylor's been really good as of late. Darwinson has been better, and I know Sawamura was dealing with a little something, but he's been really outstanding when he's been on the mound. Ottavino's been great, and Matt Barnes for the majority of the season has been nails as well. So I actually feel a lot better about the bullpen than I did just about a month ago. Now, if you're talking about the starting rotation, I agree with Wally. I don't believe that they're going to go out and get a starter. I believe their solution to that problem is going to be Chris Sale at some point and also Tanner Houck. Let's not dismiss that, right? I know Tanner Houck's going to make his way back, and Alex Cora said everything's progressing in the right direction, but there is a guy, and I know that we aren't used to this as Red Sox fans, right? Because we really haven't had a lot of these guys lately. But there's a guy at the AAA level that we know his stuff plays at the Major League level. Why do we know that? Because we've seen it. We saw it last year and we saw it this year, right? So that's where I think they'll go in terms of the starting rotation is Chris Sale at some point and then Tanner Houck. And the other option is this, Garrett Whitlock. If they continue to stretch him out in these games, if they continue to take more time in between his outings, that may indicate to you that they're thinking maybe Garrett Whitlock can be a starter, not beyond 2021, but maybe he can make a couple of spot starts, even if it's like, hey, Garrett, we just need 4 to 5 innings, almost like that opener role, if you will, or maybe a bulk role, if you will. Maybe that's an avenue to go down. So I believe those solutions are here internally. In terms of Wally's point of Bobby Dalbec, I actually feel his approach has been better over the past couple of weeks. He's been hitting the ball a little bit more consistently. I know he's always going to strike out. Totally understand that, and there's no dismissing that. That's just going to be part of his game going forward. But the big thing with him is just stop swinging at so many pitches out of the zone, and I feel like he's actually done a better job with that over the past couple of weeks. So I actually like what I see with Dalbec, and I could see them going out, and Rob Bradford and I were talking about it yesterday, getting a left-handed hitting third baseman, or first baseman, rather. But in terms of the internal solutions, I know they brought Chavis back up. I'm not the biggest Chavis guy. He was striking out 39% of the time when he was here. He's always been a high strikeout guy. I've just never been the biggest fan of his game to begin with. Danny Santana is not the answer. He's striking out nearly 30% of the time, and that basically is the same that it's been for him throughout his major league career. So I just don't think there's a lot of solutions at first base internally as of right now. So I would just ride it out with Bobby Dalbec, see what he can do for the rest of the season. And at the trading deadline, if you have the opportunity to pick up another first baseman, go ahead and do that if you have that opportunity provides itself. Now, Bradfo would mention guys like Jesus Aguilar, Moran from the Pirates, so maybe those are some of the names to be looking at. But I could see them adding a first baseman if they have the opportunity. But as of right now, I would just let Bobby Dalbec play every day at first base, right? He's a young player. I don't know how he's going to get better hitting against right-handed pitching if he's not in the lineup every day. I would just play him. Quite frankly, I believe he's got way more potential than Michael Chavis does. And in fact, I believe the most value Chavis could provide to this organization is that as a trade chip. Somebody could say, oh, he's a young kid with power. Let's take a shot at him, right? That's what I think he provides. Let's get to Mike in Attleboro. What's up, Mike?
I just wanted to weigh in on the Alex Verdugo at leadoff.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally agree he would be perfect, but I had read somewhere that he's uncomfortable with playing leadoff. That's about it. I just want to know what you thought about that.
Yeah, where'd you see that, Mike? Because I haven't seen that.
I believe I had read it in the Globe, like probably 3 months ago. I mean, sorry, 3 weeks ago or something.
Oh, okay.
If it wasn't the Globe, it was somewhere online. But yeah, everybody that was weighing in on it pretty much agreed with what you were saying. And it, to me, it makes sense as well.
Yeah.
But if the guy's uncomfortable, I mean, what do you do?
Well, Mike, this is what I would say. And look, I'm not disputing whether or not that was written, but the guy had a on-base percentage over 350 in the leadoff spot a season ago. He completely profiles as a leadoff hitter. And look at what he does in front of those guys right now, the big bats. So why not just push him up one spot in terms of the leadoff position? Because right now, I know this offense has been good for the majority of the season, but the leadoff position is hurting the Red Sox. It's really hurting the team. And I would just much rather have a good at-bat to begin every game, or every game, whether it not begin every game, but begin every first inning for the Red Sox offensively. And Alex Verdugo provides that. This guy consistently gives you good at-bat after good at-bat after good at-bat. Why wouldn't he be in the leadoff spot? It's just mind-numbing to me.
I know. I agree with you. I didn't know if you had heard
that. Mike, I'm wondering if it's more about, and this is what my hunch would be, it's more about JD and Bogarts, because JD didn't like hitting second last year. Remember that? He didn't like hitting second last year. It was a weird thing to have JD sec. He's never going to hit there again. He doesn't like it. And I'm wondering if Bogarts just likes that cleanup spot so much that Alex Cora is in a position, well, do you want to go lefty-lefty to begin the game, right? Do you want to go Verdugo-Devers, or do you want to split those guys up? I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
No, those are some pretty good points. I appreciate that, because it's just I was thinking the same thing you were.
Yeah.
Why not lead him off?
Oh, it's frustrating, especially when you see Kike go up there and he's just hacking at everything. Mike, appreciate the phone call. Yeah. Kike Hernandez hitting the leadoff. The guy's got a 6% walk rate, okay? And he's got an on-base percentage well under 300 this year. Like, I don't get it. Nobody's going to tell me that this is a good plan going forward. Alex Cora, I said on multiple occasions, I believe he's the best manager in the sport. I don't know what it is with the leadoff thing. I don't know why he can't figure out the leadoff situation. It's very bizarre. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. All right, I do want to get into an emerging weapon for the Red Sox out of the bullpen right now. We'll get into that. Plus, we'll hear from Alex Cora after this big win tonight. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.